This is FUV Live Sessions, a podcast brought to you by WFUV in New York City. Each week, we talk to artists in our Bronx studio and listen to them play a live set. You'll get to hear the songs and learn about the artist. Episodes drop every Monday wherever you get your podcasts and on WFUV.org. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on all the latest episodes and maybe to find your next favorite artist or band. This is FUV Live Sessions. I'm Megan Aftermath, and I'm here with host Kara Manning at WFUV. Kara, talk to me about this week's artist, who is just one of the nicest people I've ever met.
I concur entirely. We had Sin Cane, and he's been around for a while and has made a lot of music, has worked with a lot of other musicians. I would say, though, that We Belong, which is his most recent album, really is his best in what is already a very storied and critically acclaimed career, because with this album, Sin Cane attacks his passions in a very different way. He talks at length about the Black arts movement, Black musicians and writers who have influenced him. It is very much an uplifting album about the Black diaspora and experience. And even in the song titles, you can hear it with Come Together, We Belong, The Anthem, Rise Above. This was a very personal album for Ahmed, and he speaks about that so eloquently in our conversation. But more than that, his band, The Message, is absolutely glorious, and watching them live was transformative, and it made me a lifelong Sin Cane aficionado. And I think everybody in the studio was absolutely mesmerized and really blown away by how damn good this band is.
Yeah, it was pretty spectacular. So what are we going to start this episode with?
On FUV Live Sessions, this is Sin Cane joined by his band The Message with We Belong.
Let me tell you about me. My thoughts always keep me up. Trails of books I thought would help rectify. Be alone, and I know that you'll feel me when I settle for less than what I'm worth. I keep feeling lost. Let's wake up, take one breath, and listen from the sun. Be in tune, follow your life. So long, I keep getting on. Same old story, no need to worry. I'll take one breath and listen for the sound. Be in tune, follow your life. Be yourself, free your mind. To err is human, to forget. Take one breath and listen for the sound. Be in tune, follow your life. Be yourself, free your mind. To err is human, to forget divine. We're all that we've got, so hold on.
We're all that we got.
We're all that we've got, so be strong.
Break of dawn. Because we belong.
Because we belong.
an FUV live session. That is Cinquain, joined by his band, The Message, and We Belong, which is the title track of his absolutely stunning new album. Hello, Cinquain. Ahmed Jaleb.
Hi, how are you? Great to be back here again.
It's so good to have you back. You have a long history here at WFUV, and Yesair completely forgot. Yeah. We were talking about it earlier that you were up here with them some time ago.
Yeah, it was my first time. I think that might have been actually maybe one of my first radio sessions that I ever did.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Wow. Well, there are lines from Alexander Pope's 1711 poem, An Essay on Criticism, which are woven into We Belong. Be yourself, free your mind, to err as human, to forgive divine. A really interesting choice, given that you have spoken about a lot of pain and heartache went into this album. And the idea of forgiveness being divine, also quite important. Can you tell me why this really felt like it was an essential thing to quote in We Belong?
Sure. The difference between We Belong and other Cinquain records is that there's resolve. A lot of the records that I have made all talk about my identity crisis or where do I belong or who am I and what am I and I'm a foreigner in a foreign land or this, that, and the third. Without any resolve, it just leaves the question open. And I think it's because I was still searching, you know, still experimenting and understanding who I was through my music. It's been 5 years since I've made an album. And in those 5 years, a lot of things have changed in my life. You know, I got married. I went back to school. I really kind of zoomed out a little bit and looked at my music and myself and tried to understand what I wanted to do. You know, I got really bored with the music that I was making and the message I was trying to talk about. And I decided to take myself out of that. And through that process, I learned how to resolve the questions that I had, you know, and that's what We Belong is all about. And I think that line in particular, the Alexander Pope line, which, funny enough, it came to me through George Ben, through a song of his called Errar Humano Este, which is the Latin phrase for what we're saying, you know. When you resolve things for yourself and when you become content with who you are and forgiveness and all of that kind of, and empathy really, you know, kind of lead the charge with you on things. And that song in that part in particular very much punctuates that.
There's another Pope line in the same poem. Music resembles poetry in each our nameless graces, which no methods teach. However, how have you mentioned you went back for your master's, actually, and in music composition. Your teachers, though, have been all this complete patchwork of music that you have always absorbed. Why was this then that breakout album for you, this particular record? Because this does feel like you are freer than you have ever been, and also more focused than you've ever been.
Yes.
Like this interesting contrast.
Yeah.
I feel like for the first time in a lot of ways, I'm really hearing you in a completely different way.
Yeah, I think listening back to it, I'm hearing myself in a completely different way as well. You know, like I said, I got really bored with the way that I was approaching music and how I was making music.
Can I ask you how, like, what were you bored of?
It became very easy for me to write what I would call a Cinquain song. I could finish a song from the start of an idea in like a minute or two, you know, really compose it and know all of the tools the muscle memory to do that became just so fluid, you know, it became really easy. And I needed to challenge myself because it just became this process where I felt like a parody of myself in some way, you know. And also I wanted to dig deeper into who I was. I was really tired of just asking this question of, you know, where do I belong? Who am I? And not knowing, you know. So in the pandemic, I did a lot of work, a lot of therapy, and I realized that it would be interesting for me to study music because it's something that I've always wanted to do, and it's something that I do for a living, but I was always too afraid to do it. I thought I'd go into music school and not really get it, or the music that I would make after I learned all of the things would be inauthentic. And I guess I started listening to a lot of music that needed a bit more of intellectual understanding, you know, deeper jazz and African music, gospel music and all that kind of stuff. And I wanted to understand it, you know, I really wanted to understand what was going on. And I had this amazing 2 years at SUNY Purchase where I learned the science of music. And through that, I learned this language that I had always been trying to speak, but wasn't able to speak because I just didn't know it. And it really reminded me of when I started my undergrad. I Arabic is my first language, but I only learned it colloquially. And I went to back to school, and my mom is an Arabic professor, and she said, you should study it. Just do it. Just start from 101. It'll be interesting for you. And I did, and it opened up everything for me. I was able to communicate exactly how I wanted to. I understood what I was saying a bit more, and I became more confident as an Arabic speaker. And this is the same thing that happened with music. I learned the language, and I can listen to a song, and instead of just ripping it off, I can understand what's going on and say, okay, I see that. Now let me present my part of the conversation to this based on my inspiration from this music.
You co-produced with Money Mark, mm-hmm. and you also worked with a co-writer, Amanda Curie,
yes.
on this. And so very much there are other collaborators involved, but this sort of trio of you became the heart of what this album became.
Absolutely.
So how did you work with each of them, and why was it really important to have the two of them on board with you?
Part of the process of making this album was to make it not about me, find inspiration outside of myself. And thematically and musically, I did that. I became very inspired by modern music versus like just strictly 70s and 60s music. Thematically, like what the song's about, instead of it being about just me, it became about the Black experience, about Black people, about what we've all experienced. Instead of me, it became about we. I wanted to challenge myself because of the last album, I spent so much time on my own, being very insular about how I created the music, and the process was very much an intimate process for me. I wanted to see what it would be like if I worked with other people. You know, I've done it in the past. Greg LaFaro has been a really amazing collaborator with me, and some of my old bandmates as well. But Amanda, who used to play with me, and we had a falling out and became friends again. Through the journey of becoming friends again, I would just send her music and I would just say, hey, what do you think about these lyrics? How do you feel about these? And she's an amazing poet. So she would respond back, and it just kind of naturally happened that way. And the same thing with Money Mark. I worked with him during the Atomic Bomb Band project, the music of William Onyebor. I found myself during this process reaching out to him and saying, hey, you know what synthesizers these bands used on this song? Or how did you and Beck work together to make this part of Odelay or something like that? And it started to really inspire me. So I said, why don't you just come here and let's work on this together.
Kara Manning on FUV Live with Sin Cane. I'm Ed Jaleb talking today about his brilliant new album, We Belong. I should mention you are working with The Message, which is a brand new band as well. Very quick introduction of everybody here today, because you have a bounty of fabulous musicians and
Fantastic.
Vocalists.
Yes. It's Ronnie Lanzalotta on the bass, Dave Palazzola on the drums, Pat Carr on the keys, Ifedayo singing, and Jessica Harp singing.
And, you know, on this album as well, you collaborated with Holly Cook. You also collaborated with True Osborne on a couple of songs, but in particular, Everything is Everything, which dwells on Black pain, the murders of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor. There is a devastating line in this song. You all only know our names from hashtags.
Yeah.
This country in 2024 is terribly polarized. And empathy is rare. And I have to ask you, in making what is basically akin to your, like a masterpiece of unity, of peace, of searching, of maybe an acknowledgement of what came before, where we are presently, what could happen in the future. How can change happen for you? And why was it important to have it be sort of the foundation, the cornerstone of this album?
Change can happen for me by working through it. The only way is through, by addressing the issues. Change can happen for all of us by all of us acknowledging what's happening and not numbing ourselves and thinking that it's just going to go away. You know, we've always had issues. We've always had issues in our lifetime, in every generation's lifetime, there's been issues. And the reason why they don't go away is because they're not acknowledged by the greater good, you know, or the greater bad even. I can do my part by expressing myself and furthering the conversation of making sure that people understand that there is such thing as a Black struggle, you know, and not further the erasure of the issues, you know. And I can only hope that people listen and ask themselves questions and Google what they need to Google and just do the right thing.
There are a lot of musicians, your peers like Rhiannon Giddens and Corinne Bailey Ray and Beyonce, Fantastic Negrita, who are all doing something that is akin to what you're doing, is really sort of looking back and also raising and talking about, as you mentioned, erasure, Black history, Black culture. Do you feel that there's sort of camaraderie in what is happening now with other musicians?
I think the history of Black music just has this as a part of the conversation. You know, whether it's through gospel music, using that as a form of community and healing, whether it's through jazz by furthering the conversation with every generation by listening to what you heard before and responding to that and adding something to you. Everything is influenced by our experience and by our struggle. You know, in Africa, in the United States, in South America, in the Caribbean, all over the world, we have found art as a form of therapy for us to deal with what we deal with every single day, you know, and it works. It works not only for us, it works for everybody because everybody likes the music and everybody listens to it and relates to it, you know. Bob Marley is as ambient as the sounds of cars walking down the street, you know, and everything that he writes about is the Black struggle. That's one way that we celebrate each other, and that's one way that we create community, is by continuing this conversation with each other to look at one another and say, hey, I see you, I understand, I'm here with you, I'm showing you, I'm showing up for you. But also, it's just not silenced.
You have a very eclectic background. You were born in the UK, but you were raised most of your childhood in Sudan. Then you moved to various places in the U.S., including Ohio, where you went to high school and college in Ohio. Mm-hmm. You now live in Brooklyn or thereabouts, somewhere in New York City.
Yeah, Brooklyn. Yeah.
Are you still in Greenpoint?
Yes, I am.
Oh, you're still in Greenpoint. but given all of that, a song like Come Together, which, well, spoiler, but it ends on the stunning crescendo of Africa. It relates back to the import of Sudan in your life. Cape Verde is represented in the video of Come Together.
Exactly, yeah.
Talk to me about what this dramatic, beautiful song, Come Together, means to you and the writing of it.
I think it comes back down to resolve. I've written a lot of these songs where I'm asking, where do I come from? Who am I? I feel like a foreigner in a foreign land. I don't connect with this version of who I'm supposed to be as an American, or this version that I'm supposed to be as a Sudanese person. And I've been challenged by both, you know, and I think a lot of people who are part of my generation, third culture kids, as we call ourselves, have dealt with the same thing. You know, they don't feel quite at home back home in Africa, in my case, or in the United States. But I did a lot of work on figuring that out, and I've become comfortable with myself, and I've found my resolve. That song made a lot of sense for me to talk about that and to kind of express, I feel comfortable as an African, I feel comfortable as an American. And I wanted to lead this album with that, to make people understand that this is definitely a different vibe, a different energy that you're going into.
Let's hear it now. This is Cinquaine on FUV Live Sessions.
Africa. Just memory.
two, but one in soul, frozen in this time. We will show stars how to glow, together you and I. All our being, everything.
I'm Kara Manning with FUV Live Sessions. I'm here with Cinquain Ahmed Jaleb, and that is Come Together, which he played live in FUV's studio in New York City with his band, The Message. An incredible band you have here, Ahmed.
Thank you very much.
When we did a bit of a Q&A earlier this year, in which you spoke quite eloquently about your distress that what is going on in Sudan now, which is a civil war that has lasted now over a year between two generals, is getting virtually no attention in news media and whatnot. It's been overlooked. Obviously, Sudan has had many, many struggles over many, many, many years. It must hurt your heart on a daily basis because you would obviously still have family back there. Is any close family still back there?
On my father's side, everyone is back there. On my mother's side, they've all fled. And unfortunately, on my mother's side, my cousin passed away as he was fleeing. So There has been a mass exodus of people from Sudan. Over 5 million people displaced, 300, 400, maybe, I think it's maybe about 500,000 people died in this just gruesome war. And a lot of people posting up in borders. And one big border is the Egypt-Sudan border. And men are not granted visas. Sudanese men were not granted visas to go in, so you have to apply. And that happened right as the war hit. You know, it was very easy to go to Egypt before, but once the war hit, they did that. And my cousin was waiting for his visa and passed away. The situation there is just really dire. You know, it's really hot. No one is eating. There's no clean water. You're sleeping on dusty mosque floors and stuff like that. It's really, really bad. So it's frustrating for me that no one is talking about it. You know, it's the same thing with the Congo. No one is talking about the genocide happening in the Congo as well. And it's even more frustrating to realize that this is just par for the course. You know, a lot of people just don't care about Africa. You know, it's not as sexy of a story as anything else that's in the news right now. And that's just unfortunate.
You come from a very artistic family of poets, clerics, and musicians.
Mm-hmm.
When was the last time you were able to visit Sudan?
2017, UNESCO did a festival in Sudan, actually, in a city called Karamakol. And I brought the band and we got to play.
You did?
Yeah, it was amazing.
I would imagine that is a dream of yours again, to be able to go back one day and be able to do that again.
Of course. I mean, we were supposed to do it, actually, again. And the beginning of what is now happening hit. We were about to fly in and then there was a state of emergency and the rest is history.
you also had the opportunity to be one of the last people to be able to work with Casey Benjamin, who yes. passed away. Incredible yes. vocoder player, saxophonist. He's on three songs on this album?
He's on the anthem. A lot of this album,
yeah. Working with him, what was that experience like for you?
Casey was a superhuman. You know, the first time we worked together was on my album Mars. And I remember him coming into my studio, and I just played him something. I was like, just do whatever you want. And it was instant, just amazing color and musicality and just wonderful creativity coming out of him. And I looked at him, I was like, okay, well, that's, I mean, I don't need to ask you to do anything. And he's like, well, you know, whatever you need, just let me know. And I would give him some references and he would hit him right on the nail on the head. So when I came back to work with him on this album, I wanted to just go in with him. I said, let's sit down together. We can, you know, I'll play you the songs in a very raw state. And if you want to put your two cents in as a composer, as a songwriter, whatever, we can work it out. And he ended up really helping me shape a lot of the music. And that was the first step. And then the second step, we came into the studio and he came into the studio the second time really, really prepared. He had all these ideas. And just watching him work was like just watching a genius, you know? He's unbelievable. Unbelievable. And we seriously have lost a titan.
He passed in March. It was quite sudden.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
We're all very, you know, we lost a big one.
The whole process of this album from beginning to end, when you started writing and when you finally, you know, mastered it, what was that? How long of a process was that?
It was probably 5 years.
5 years of this. Wow.
Yeah. And it was a wonderful 5 years. I mean, it was the first time that I really was able to understand the beauty of the process. You know, before it would take me a year to make an album, and I would make it very quickly. I'd be very efficient and go into the studio, be done in 2 weeks, you know, write for about 9 months and then recorded in 2 weeks. This one, I really took my time. I really asked myself a lot of questions. I really challenged myself to do things that I would have never done. Work with a lot of people, not sing a lot of the songs, and work with a producer and take these ideas to my private study instructor at school and analyze them, you know? And I think I really found my voice through that process.
And concurrently, obviously, you were still getting a master's. You were also writing a musical, an adaptation of Roald Dahl's The Enormous Crocodile, which premiered in December in Leeds, in the UK, which must have been a thrill. Was that the first time you'd ever stepped into theater, working in theater?
Yeah. I got a cold call from them, and it was very surreal for me. You know, I was born in the UK. I've read a lot of Roald Dahl growing up. And I thought it was a joke, you know, just straight up. I was like, well, this email is not real. And when they doubled down and they said, we're coming to the States and we'd like to meet with you, I was like, okay, let's see what's happening. And I told them straight up, I was like, I've never done this before, but I would like to figure this out. And then they said, okay, well, which book would you like to do?
Really? So you chose The Enormous Crocodile?
Yeah, I chose. That's my favorite childhood book.
I love that.
Yeah, and we put the team together, me, Emily Lim, Tom Brady, Suhail Al-Bushra, who's also Sudanese, British, and Toby Ollier, and we just went in. It was a very, very wonderful 5 years of working on that, and I can attest a lot of my new approach to creativity to that team. They really pushed me and really made me ask myself a lot of questions and challenged the decisions that I was making to create what we are all very proud of, you know? I'm so happy about that.
You know, it's funny because when I first heard We Belong, when I first started listening to it, I thought this could be theater. There's something theatrical. Like I could envision it being a musical.
Yeah.
In some ways. And I would hope that you continue like working in that vein as well.
I would love to, you know, I'm
you have a knack for it.
Yeah. You know, it's something that I never thought I would ever do. And I have certainly been bit by the bug and I'm obsessed.
Yo, that's good. A fresh obsession is always nice to greet the new year with. That's fantastic. There's a lot of serious songs on We Belong, but then you just went to town and you created what is basically a disco. Like, euphoric cloud with How Sweet Is Your Love. You wanted to write basically a version of a Chic or an Earth, Wind & Fire song.
Exactly.
It was it to the sort of like, I need to cheer myself up, or what was it?
It was, to be honest. You know, I think, you know, when you're writing music like this, that is about this stuff, as a Black person, you're just like revisiting trauma, essentially. And you find a way to transmute that and make something beautiful out of it. But after a while, it just gets exhausting. It's like, oh man, I don't want to relive this pain, but I can understand our experience as a celebratory experience as well, because that's what we do, you know, beyond transmuting the pain and beyond figuring out a way to cope with the pain. We also know how to celebrate, and we do it very, very, very well. And I test that to listening to a lot of Sly Stone. You know, Sly Stone songs are just so joyous and so happy. And, you know, a song literally called Fun, you know. So you can have the good with the bad, and you can also understand it's all holistic, you know. It's all there.
Before we dive into this, I did want to ask you about your two stunning Creston guitars, which are works of art. And one of them, which is like the color of a cherry orchard.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, but it's brand new. It is your new toy. Can you talk about how you had it custom designed for you?
Sure. Yeah. It's really my, as this album is a love letter to Black music, that guitar is a love letter to all of my heroes, all my guitar heroes. It's Creston, who I will say right now is the greatest guitar maker in the world. The level of detail and attention he gives to the people he works with is unbelievable, and the love and just passion that he puts into his craft is unprecedented. You know, he's unbelievable. Creston has this really wonderful thing where he talks about these rules that he doesn't want to break as a guitar maker, and him and I really like to troll one another, and I said, I'm going to make you break all those rules, you know. So I had this guitar made that was an ode to Robbie Robertson, Jamie Stillman, Joe Walsh, Jerry Garcia, Prince, all of my guitar heroes. And I kind of, you know, took this body shape of all the guitars that they played, you know, Jamie's Epiphone Scroll, Jerry's Tiger, Joe Walsh's Strat, you know, and like I wanted to create something out of that. And then the pickups that were set up just like Robbie Robertson's Last Waltz guitar, with the middle pickup and the bridge pickup butted next to each other, and so that it doesn't get in the way of my strumming, because him and I have a similar thing. I have a Jerry boost on it, that just like Jerry Garcia, a boost button just like his, and it's a burgundy mist, metallic burgundy mist is the color, which is an ode to Prince, because he's the purple one, as we call him. And yeah, you know, it's just this wonderful Swiss Army knife of a guitar. I can use it for anything. It feels great. It plays really, really, really well, and I just am in love.
It is an absolutely stunning guitar. And you also, the floral guitar that you also have is also a thing of great beauty.
Yeah, he made that for me a few years ago. And it's in collaboration with this amazing artist named Sarah Ryan, who does the paint jobs. And she asks you to give her three colors, and then you don't see the guitar until it's done. So I gave the colors of the Sudanese flag, a black base with red, white, and green. And I told her that my favorite animal is a African elephant, and it came back with this beautiful floral guitar with a wonderful picture in the back of the neck of an African elephant. It's just beautiful.
Well, you know what, Cinquain Ahmed Jaleb, so are you. You are beautiful, and it is really such an honor to have you back.
Thank you so
here
much.
At FUV. We love you so much. I do feel that we let you down by not having a mirror ball in the studio for How Sweet Is Your Love. We will have to rectify that and find a mirror ball for you.
Next
and
this time. Is
and thank you so much.
Thank you.
The album is called We Belong. The artist is Cinquain. The band is The Message, accompanying Ahmed. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Let's move as one. The time has come. Let's let it shine. is your love. How sweet is your love? How sweet is your love? How sweet is your love? How sweet is your love?
That was Cinquain performing and in conversation at WFUV in New York City. A big thank you to Cinquain and his band The Message for joining us in our studio and to the City Slang label. Thanks to our WFUV audio team, including Jim O'Hara, Alan Wang, and Olivia Graham. FUV Live Sessions are engineered by Jim O'Hara. Megan Oftermatt produced this episode. Be sure to subscribe to FUV Live Sessions on your podcast platform so that you can catch all of the latest episodes and maybe find your new favorite band or artist. New episodes drop every Monday. You can also catch audio and video of FUV Live Sessions on WFUV.org. FUV Live Sessions is a production of WFUV in New York City. I'm Kara Manning, your host and producer of this episode featuring Cinquain.